All right, we're back. that was rough. So I just learned a lesson in live stream that sometimes everything just blows up, crashes and burns, and you just need to cut the stream. So that was a good lesson of humility for the Loopcast. Josh's energy in the studio was just much too powerful for the tech to even handle. So apologies to everyone for that little mishap. But we got a lot more to get back into.
But here. I did say the prayer to St. Michael, and as soon as that prayer was done, everything's working. So
there you go. So we're back, St. Michael. Thank you for the little assist there. So to recap kind of what we talked about before, so Logan is in Arizona working with the political team. Josh was giving advice on how to handle dumb arguments on Twitter. And, oh, interesting, first confession tonight for OCIA or RCIA from Dom Higgy. We'll get to that in a second. But Josh, if you wanted to, this actually I think is relevant because I think this happens to a lot of people in their lives. Like they see dumb arguments taking place either with friends or their workplace or online, especially online. And it's almost nice to have a guide of like how to engage with trolls online. What would your advice be to someone? You see something, you're not sure whether to bite or not, like how to engage an argument.
Yeah, I mean, part of it,
in a meaningful way.
You know, I work for Catholic Vote, and as my wife likes to say, I argue for a living. That's why she doesn't like getting in arguments with me. But I guess when it comes down to it, I always try to think to myself, I try to think like St. Joseph, am I being productive in my use of time? So I want to be good for my employer, my audience, and just not waste time. And when I'm in, you know, do I need to engage in this argument or not? Or is it really just about blowing off steam and screaming into the ether and, you know, saying a bunch of stuff online? Or can I stop for a second and think, can I actually add anything to this debate? Can I contribute in a meaningful way? And just to know that there's obviously a lot of people, it's called trolling. You know, they say things intentionally and provocatively just to get people upset. And I think of Mike Lewis. He's got the website Where Peter Is. We've been talking about him a few times in the past. That guy's a troll. He's saying stuff just to get people upset. And then there's that, was it Rich Rajo or something like that? Some Catholic lefty.
Total troll.
Bigger troll. Total troll. He was just talking about the other day, like, why do we, it's so weird that we have all the crucifixes covered up for Holy Week. You know, like, what is going on with that? The Vatican II Church is done with this. And everyone's like, what are you talking about? Like, you're not even getting your Vatican II stuff right, you know? And so at some point you just got to realize, am I really adding anything to this debate, you know, or can you just say, this is a little silly and I'm not going to waste my time. So when you're arguing with somebody, are they going to be operating? Are they going to argue back in good faith or not? If not, then really, is it worth your time? Secondly, remember that when you're debating with somebody, oftentimes the goal shouldn't necessarily be to keep arguing until you win them over. You may not win them over. You should faithfully represent what you believe, but then remember that your audience might not necessarily be the person you're discussing it with. It might be someone else who's coming along and watching what you're saying. And so you want to make sure you're doing a good job of faithfully articulating what, you know, what your position is.
Yeah, I think oftentimes it's the people that go kind of rabid and are just like furiously typing back at everyone that puts out. It's like, it honestly makes their argument less convincing to me because I'm like, you seem like a crazy person. Like, therefore, why would I trust what you have to say on whatever? And Mike Lewis is a good example of this. I was actually just telling my wife something he put out. It was about ad orientem versus facing people, which of course is just like the intra-Catholic debates are so exhausting. But he's like, who even pretends like this is a better thing? You know, like who would want a priest to face away from you as opposed to facing to you? And I actually saw like a pretty good response to that. There was a priest who responded back and said, well, I don't know if you know, but cathedrals, like traditional Catholic churches, are designed to have the acoustics actually reach people while you're facing the altar. So like the priest is facing the altar, God, of course, during consecration. That's kind of the purpose, as why churches are designed in a narrow way facing the altar and that we're all facing God. But the acoustics, if you project correctly, will bounce off the wall, go up, and then actually come behind people. And as most people, I think, kind of jumping in these debates, it just really revealed to me how ignorant I think most people are of tradition, architecture, like all of the things that, you know, you're supposed to expert on. And so all it takes is one troll to like throw out a dumb opinion that just fires everyone up. But it's like, did anyone learn anything here? Or like, are the people speaking the people that should be speaking on it? I don't know. All things to kind of parse out. Yeah. Logan, I'm sure you've probably dealt with your fair share of trolls in your day, right?
Yeah. I mean, my first rule is just don't engage. Whenever someone's trolling me online, it's like, just don't engage. Don't feed into the trolls. But I think it's something you have to learn working in politics. And I think it's a good life lesson to know what hills are worth dying on and which ones should you just let go.
Yeah. Actually, I was in a conversation on Twitter with my friend Matt Burke. I say friend jokingly, but he was on the Loopcast. So big shout out to the Super Bowl champ and
friend.
And somebody said, God is for the weak. And I'm like, yeah, and I'm glad he's for the weak. I mean, that's good. I'm weak. I need him. Praise God. You know, so like sometimes you can get under the skin of the trolls, too. It's kind of funny. He didn't have a response to that. So that's pretty fun.
Yeah. And I did want to talk about this. So Dom Higgy previously revealed that he is going through RCIA, going to be received in the church on Easter. Congratulations. It's going to be awesome. But this is good Holy Week talk. So first confession tonight for RCIA, asked if he has any advice. Do you have anything that you would give to someone in this situation?
The biggest advice I would have was just to realize every priest has heard just about every sin you could think of. It would be really unique for you to say something. I mean, just imagine this. Like, you're going to actually say something that's never been done before. I mean, like the first family that we ever had, Adam and Eve, they had sons and one murdered the other son. So, I mean, like, as far as there's nothing new under the sun, I can't imagine you would say some sin and the priest would go, oh my goodness, I've never heard that before. I got to write this down. First, they don't. They don't honestly care about what the sin is. They just want you to be healed. They don't memorize. Remember, we're talking about men here. We don't remember anything. So don't worry about that. He's just there to try to bring God's grace and healing to you. And so just to be comforted in that. And the thing is, everyone says this, when you get out of confession, you just feel so much better. And the devil is trying to, you know, all the demons are just trying to convince you to be very anxious and to be very nervous and to be, you know, have your brain going a mile a minute. Like, oh, what is the priest going to say? What about this? Oh, should I say that? Should I give details? Whatever. You know, it's going to be fine. It is going to be fine. You know, the last thing the devil wants is for you to walk in there and just to say what is on your mind and to recount your sins. He wants you to feel guilty and horrible so that you don't go into confession. And he hates the confessional more than anything else. Just remember that. So just go there. Don't have any sweat. Don't have any worry. We've all had some major sins. I've got a lot of them. So just don't worry about it.
Logan's never had to go to confession, so.
I mean, with a face like this, come on. Innocence. Pure innocence. No, I mean, I think it's good to remember. Something I always tell myself is priests are just another broken vessel for a beautiful mercy. And so when you go, just know you're talking to somebody else who struggles with the same things we struggle with. They're human beings. And so we're kind of all in this struggle together.
Yeah. Ooh. I think the thing that I would maybe add is, cause maybe I'm just beyond I've gone to confession so many times, I'm beyond kind of the fear element. I think Mercer's advice is good for sure. But I just think like, it's so important to have a true sincerity, a true repentance, and like working even in the line to confession or before you go to confession, like just getting yourself in the state of just like sincerely willing forgiveness for your sins and understanding that you need God's mercy, and just to go in there with a very contrite, sincere heart, because that always makes me leave feeling the best after feeling like I put it all on the table, I went through all of the correct steps, and then you know, you hear the words of absolution and then I feel amazing. Like someone always jokes like, oh, I hope that I get struck by lightning when I touch the doorknob to leave the confessional. You know, you go straight to heaven. It's kind of that feeling.
It's also just,
yeah, it's just
a good points there, Tom. The only thing I would add to it would be if in life in general, the way you look at other people who maybe cut you off in traffic or, you know, say something mean to you or rude, or if you just had an attitude of there, but for the grace of God, go I, it truly be humble. That's the one thing. If you think of, there was the one, I think it was St. Moses one of the desert fathers of Egypt. And he said, You know, you try to fast, but the devil doesn't eat. You know, you try to be, you know, stronger, and, you know, I mean, demons have immense power. But the fact is, the one thing you do that the devils and the demons can't do is humility. And that makes the devil just, he absolutely detests that humility. And that is the one power that you have, just to be truly devoid of yourself as much as you can. And that's a ticket to heaven right there.
St. Moses the Black, I believe.
That's it. That's
one,
it. Yeah.
One of the goats. Yeah. An interesting point from Colleen. She says, St. Faustina is said to pray for the priest before your confession, which, interesting, I didn't think about that. But one thing I always think of, because I've been in places where, and Josh and I have opined about this before, where confession is just limited to like half hour on a Saturday and in a time that doesn't work for anyone. And a major reason why I'm Catholic and able to sustain living a Catholic lifestyle is the sacrament of confession, and how much power priests have to absolve sins by making themselves available and encouraging frequent use of the sacrament is a complete game changer for faith communities. And to that point that Colleen made, it must be really taxing on priests that make themselves available constantly to hear people's sins, to hear about the worst of humanity all the time. It reminds me of kind of like if you had to work like a bouncer job at a bar or something,
well,
and you just always had to kick out drunks. It's like you just see the worst of the worst all the time. But on the flip side, you know, for a priest, you get to absolve people to have that power. So
yeah,
I think a great reminder to always be praying for these priests, because they do have to hear, they have to, it's exhausting. You have to hear about all these sins, but it's such a beautiful and important part of like a Catholic lifestyle. So I will always commend priests that are making themselves constantly available, churches that make that a priority.
And to preach about it.
To preach about it. It's not talked about enough. I think you kind of get the prosperity gospel a little bit too much, especially when it comes to Protestant churches, but even at Catholic churches. Confessions
Church of Nice is a bigger problem in our church than the prosperity gospel, but I know what
prosperity
you mean.
Gospel. Yeah. Church. I think I meant Church of Nice. Good call on that one. So yeah, we briefly touched on Planet Fitness before everything crashed and burned. Logan canceled her membership. I think for
and
people
apparently
that
Planet
not
Fitness
hanging
canceled
out
on our live stream.
Yeah, right. Planet Fitness was mad. So Logan, just for people that weren't hanging out on the live, just so we get it out to everyone, what's going on with Planet Fitness? Why'd you cancel your membership?
Oh, so it just kicked me off and brought me back on. So we are not completely in the clear with the tech issues, but with Planet Fitness. So, okay. I loved my membership at Planet Fitness because I travel a ton for work. And so I was able to use it wherever I went, which was super convenient. But I canceled my membership last week because Planet Fitness has decided to join all the other woke organizations and corporations. And you know what they say, like I said earlier, the cliche, once you go woke, then you go broke. I mean, it's true for Planet Fitness. They decided that they were going to allow men to go into women's locker rooms and then punish anyone who stood up against it, which I think we've heard this song and dance before. But unfortunately for Planet Fitness, fortunately for us, they've seen a massive profit fall. In a five-day span, I think that we said it was over $400 million, nearly $500 million profit fall in 5 days. Absolutely insane. And the craziest part is, you look at this guy on the screen, it's a man. Like, this isn't even like, he's not even disguising the fact that he's a man. And I think one thing that we've all been afraid of ever since Target started this whole bathroom thing, I don't know, Josh, what year was that? 2015? 2014? We've all had the fear that we're putting our daughters and women on the line. We're putting them at risk, and we're seeing that continue to perpetuate. I mean, it's terrifying. So yeah, I canceled my membership happily. I marched on in there like a good little conservative and canceled it. So that means I'm taking some
picture,
rest days.
I hate to say, and for people that haven't seen it, you can Google it or come over to the YouTube, hop on the Loopcast YouTube, subscribe. We just hit 5,000 subscribers. Thank you guys. It's so exciting. But the guy's not trying. I mean, it's crazy. And I talked about this earlier too. This woman took a picture of him. So this picture that we see here, because a 12-year-old was uncomfortable in the women's bathroom. So he is doing this in front of a 12-year-old in a women's bathroom at Planet Fitness. Her membership was canceled because she took this picture. So in the Planned Parenthood Terms of Services, I believe their statement is that people can use the restroom that aligns with their sincerely held gender identity, which of course, rife for abuse. That's the most ridiculous legal talk ever. And then in their terms of service as well, I think taking a picture like in a bathroom is considered against their terms of service. So that came down on her, benefited this guy. And I think $450 million market cap knocked off in like 4 days. And it really makes me happy to see like this is just the most common sense. I think it has a little bit of the Bud Light element where there's so many alternatives. Like Planet Fitness is nice because there's so many of them, but there's also plenty of other gyms you could go to. Like you could go to 100%. Crunch Fitness. You could go to Anytime Fitness. Like there's plenty of other options. And those places should welcome people canceling with open arms and not do stupid stuff with their policies like this, you know?
I agree. And I think conservatives are willing to pay more to not have to deal with this. I mean, I am 100% willing to pay more than $10 a month to know that I'm going to be able to go to the bathroom and not worry about a grown man being in there. I mean, it's a small price to pay. I mean, it's absurd. So I've been meeting with legislators in a couple different states talking about legislation surrounding this issue and like how can you attack it from a legislative side on the state level. And one of the things that we've talked about is, you know, how can we ensure that these organizations are held liable? So how can we make sure Planet Fitness is held liable if something happens to a girl in their bathrooms thanks to them allowing grown men in there? And so I think you're going to see a lot more states trying to find ways around these issues and try to stand up for their people.
Yeah, for sure.
We shouldn't have to wait until there's a court case or an assault. You know, it'd be nice to get laws passed where it said, no, it's based on your biological sex at birth. Let's go.
So I've just been told there's a Planet Fitness commercial that we need to watch by a producer here. Said it's pretty crazy. If you guys, if you want to experience that with. Wait, this is real?
I think that was a skit.
That has to be a parody. Come on now. I got played by the producers. There's no way that is real. Oh my gosh, I got completely played. Oh my gosh. All right.
Well,
no mercy Monday.
You know, all this talk of genders has me thinking that I need to leave the guys to have some guy time on the Loopcast because I have to go get to work. So
Logan is way too important to the organization to be hanging out in the Loopcast with us.
As much as I'd rather be here, I've seen, you know, people walk by that I need to go meet with. So I'm in a glass box right now and everyone can see me. And so it's kind of awkward. So I do have to go talk to them.
All right, Logan, thank you for hopping on for the Planet Fitness segment. Josh and I will soldier on.
Yeah, hate to miss the rest.
I know, but everyone's going to leave because they want Logan more than us. So.
That's true.
Erica, hold on, just hold on. All right, bye, guys.
All right, see you, Logan. All right, Josh, so we're moving on now. Where should we dive?
I want to jump into this Carvel stuff. I think it's amazing.
Okay, go for it.
Well, you know, a lot. This is probably too. I don't know if you remember James Carville. Probably too old school for you. But James Carville is a veteran Democratic consultant. He was instrumental to Bill Clinton's election victory in 1992. He was the one that famously said, "It's the economy, stupid," when talking about the race in 1992. And now he's on a kind of a warpath of his own right now. He was blaming President Joe Biden's low approval ratings on the party having too many preachy females. And he said he was looking at, you know, Joe Biden's approval ratings at 37%. He said the abysmal polling numbers, looking at these horrible poll numbers, it's like walking in on your grandma naked. The raging cage and James Carville has a way of saying things, let me tell you what. But he said that
this guy was associated with Bill. Surprise, surprise.
Yeah, he said the party's feminine voice is way too woke. And he said, quote, "The woke stuff is killing us." He goes, a suspicion of mine is that there are too many preachy females, he said. And their message is, don't drink beer, don't watch football, don't eat hamburgers. This is not good for you. The message is too feminine. Everything you're doing is destroying the planet. You've got to eat your peas. And Carvel is saying that this message is disastrous. Not only, I mean, white men have sort of left the Democratic Party, you know, a long time ago. There's still, obviously, some white men that vote for Democrats, obviously. But the problem is, it's now that black men are leaving the Democratic Party. Either they're going to stay home or they're going to vote for Trump. And so Carville's desperately worried about this, that members of his party are going to, his party's going to lose the election because the Democratic Party is way too progressive left, feminist, anti-man, anti-enjoying anything, football, beer,
so, whatever. So can I, and I think there's a lot of wisdom there, but can I ask you this question then? It seems like, how do I want to phrase this? What won Joe Biden in the election in 2020 was white female suburban voters.
That's true.
So if that's the case and it won him in 2020, is it a strategic play to be, you know, going all in on abortion, going all in on climate change, going all in on what's clearly white suburban women care about the most? Is it an intentional play, or has it just been kind of something that the left has just succumbed to the extremes? So like the AOCs or the Ilhan Omars, like the people on the far, far left are just so sensational that they just kind of get sucked a little bit towards that side. What do you think?
So if you look at the last few election cycles, you know, 2016, 2020, and then now this 2024 presidential campaign. So we're seeing a realignment going on in politics. And so Donald Trump was able to get a lot of working class, blue collar, white voters to vote for him in 2016. And he still held on to enough of the suburban, white suburban voters to get elected president. But in 2020, you're right, he lost a lot of the white suburban, especially women voters, enough of them, and that Biden was able to get elected. Now, people say, well, the election was stolen, shenanigans. There were shenanigans in 2016, too, by the way. And there were going to be shenanigans in 2024. I do think voting by mail was a bad idea, and it probably cost us more in 2020. So it may have been the difference. Sure. But in 2016, Donald Trump won over a lot of white, blue-collar Democrats. He kept them in 2020, but he lost these white suburban women a lot. And in 2024, he's still not doing a great job with these suburban women, but he's now picking up more Hispanic and black men to his coalition. So right now, he's leading in the polls by about 3 or 4 points nationwide, in addition to leading by 5 points in several states like Michigan, Arizona, Pennsylvania. If the election were held today, Donald Trump would win, even still not doing so great amongst these white suburban women. And the point that James Carville is trying to make is, if you double down too hard on this white suburban message, you're causing these black men and Hispanic men to say, forget this. This party just doesn't stand for me. I'm going to become a Republican or stay home. Either way, it's going to be disastrous for Biden.
And I have to say, it feels like the white men demographic are even kind of lost by that too, by the preachy, pitchy, screaming,
well,
everything. You know what I mean?
Of course
like
they are.
Such a small demographic that.
But white men
seems like that.
White men is the demographic that have voted Republican for how many decades or generations now? So it there's no difference really.
Can I ask you then? When did they lose the women?
Well,
you know, if you think white men were voted this way for so long, why did all of a sudden their wives start voting the other way?
Well, there's always been a bit of a gender gap, but when we talk about the gender gap, it's important to realize that married women vote Republican. It's unmarried mm-hmm. women that vote Democratic. And of course, we've talked about this before, that people are getting married at later dates. And so the number of people proportionally who are unmarried is higher now. And so the number of unmarried women that are part of the electorate is a higher number, and they're overwhelmingly voting Democrat. So, you know, it's true that if we could encourage more family formation, then, you know, single women would become married women, and they tend to vote, you know, I would say more conservatively, naturally. So,
yeah,
I'm not unbiased in that realm either. But, you know, the gender gap, as people have said, is really a marriage gap. And single women vote overwhelmingly Democratic, but married women still favor the Republican Party.
Yeah, and I've seen it even flip where young unmarried women start off as Democrats. And then basically as soon as they get married, within the next couple of years, their ideology starts to shift a little bit. I mean, I'd imagine most of that because they have kids now, future responsibility, maybe a closer in touch with like a masculine perspective. I don't know.
Possibly. I mean, it's Kellyanne Conway used to talk about the M's. You know, they have a mortgage, they have munchkins. You know, there's reasons why they tend to start drifting a little bit to the right on voting stuff. So we'll see.
I have not heard the M's, although we did go kind of hard on Kellyanne Conway for her pro-life statements, which is fair.
Yeah.
This is my Twilight Zone. I want to play it early because I think there's a lot of meat here. So if we could pull this up. So there's a show on Netflix. I guess it's based on a book. I actually just talked to someone who is pretty familiar with it. I think I'd read it. It's called The Three Body Problem. It's a sci-fi novel, and there's a scene that was just going crazy. Every time I see it, it always shocks me because you hear communism and you kind of think of your harmless, nutty professor at some liberal institution. They don't have much pull. Obviously, we see a lot of elements of this, unfortunately, kind of creeping in society. That's a constant topic. But there's as a part of this series, there is a real live struggle session. And if we could play it with no volume, if that'd be possible, because I think the visuals just absolutely like knocked me off my seat. I just had to look in to see what all this was about. Basically, in the book, it is a wife and husband. The wife tells on the husband because the husband is a physics professor and he was teaching basic physics concepts. And that was enough to get him in trouble with the state because the state, it wasn't a state approved science to be taught. And so what they did was they brought him in front of a crowd of people chanting, and the wife was up there pointing at him. He had to wear like a dunce cap basically, and they beat him to death. And the rest is very graphic because they kill him on the stage. But someone tweeted about it, and the tweet was, "What did y'all think communism meant? Vibes, papers, essays?" And it always reminds me of how many lives were taken by communism in brutal, revolutionary, ruthless fashion, and. It was in Chinese dub, but the slogans reminded me so much of like slogans that we've just heard over the last couple of years. So like Black Lives Matter or Trust the Science or, you know, whatever phrase just gets repeated over and over again, because of course that means you're devoid of actually nuance or thinking. It's just basically to get rile people up. And seeing that just was like,
but it's
scary,
interesting though.
To me,
I mean,
it's possible.
We hear so much in TVs and in movies about the Holocaust, which was horrifying. You know, 6 million Jews that were killed by the Nazis. But why don't we hear about the millions of people that were killed in China? Why don't we hear about the millions that were killed in Soviet Russia? You know, the so many people were killed in Cambodia. You know, all these different communist revolutionaries, you know, places. And it's really, you know, the Nazis... that gets a lot of attention, but you never hear it about. I'm glad to see that there's some movie now you're saying involving
this. This was on Netflix.
That's
this is crazy to me that this is out on a mainstream, because it's so rare to see this in mainstream form because China actually has such a large influence. Remember China like made John Cena apologize for saying that Taiwan was a country?
Absolutely.
Like they are dominant over what messages get out because they hold so much power. But yeah, this came out and it really stirred a lot of people up because it was just shocking to see. This was a reality of what happened in China throughout the 1900s. Even I remember talking to he's still in jail. Do you remember his name, Josh? He's
Jimmy
I did the interview. Jimmy Lai. Jimmy Lai is still in jail right now because he had a pro... So it was anti-CCP newspaper in Hong Kong, and he's in jail on these drummed up charges that are total nonsense. And he grew up during the communist revolution in China, and his family lived in like a middle-class house. And then all of a sudden that was just seized, and then they could pay rent on it for a little bit. And then they were just kicked out completely. And he escapes to Hong Kong to like live a better life, basically. His parents just sent him on a boat with a coin in his underwear to, and of course the coin got stolen, but he ended up in Hong Kong with nothing. And to read through like what Fulton Sheen had to say about communism and John Paul II had to say about communism, it almost like it loses its value a little bit, because I think it gets talked about so much and we don't see things like this. Like, it's when you see it visually like this, you're like, whoa, this is kind of scary.
It brings it to life.
It feels real. Totally. It makes it feel so real. So like, I don't know. It's hard not to connect this to a lot of things that I've kind of seen in regards to like 2020, like what we got with rioting there, what we're getting with like DEI in schools. Like, it all feels very like early stages of a lot of this kind of thing. So I was just, the Twilight Zone was that this was put out in any mainstream media, period. So I thought I'd get in earlier.
No, I thought it was good. And you know, you're right though, like with John Cena, a lot of these actors and movie studios are afraid to take on China. So that Netflix put this out was really actually courageous. I'm not saying they're virtuous and they put out a lot of stuff that's garbage and awful and morally repugnant, but that they did this right, I will give them props for it. it is true though. There are a lot of companies, business companies or whatever, that are more than willing to bend over backwards and do the unspeakable because they want to keep the Chinese market on their side. So,
yeah. And then also, happy Holy Week, everyone. I saw, shout out Mitch, you threw that up right away. Happy Holy Week. Big week for Catholics, obviously. And I thought this would be a good opportunity to interact with the chat a little bit. I was talking to my mom over the weekend, and I have a young son, and thinking about just how important Easter is liturgically. Actually, it's the most important for Catholics. And the celebration that it gets met with often is just very, like, dumb and secular, like Easter eggs and bunnies, and it has nothing to do with Catholicism really. And I was just thinking about ways to kind of instill, as my kid gets older, what Easter really means in children. And I was wondering if there's any Easter traditions out there. Oh, bang. Okay. So first off, anyone in the chat right now, if you have any liturgical Easter traditions that you do, send it out there. I've just been trying to mull on ways to make this week really special, especially now as I have children. But Josh, what were you saying about Easter eggs? And then if you have anything you guys do to make Holy Week extra holy.
Yeah, so I mean, it used to be that the Lenten fast, people wouldn't even eat eggs. So that's why they'd have an abundance of eggs left over by the time, you know, the 46 days of Lent are over. And so they, you know, it became a tradition. There was also the story about Mary Magdalene and the egg. The exact part of the story is failing me now, but like she touched the egg and it turned red. It was so, I mean, it's just, there's a lot of cool stories out there.
That's cool.
About that. So, in terms of what we do for it, we have, the biggest thing for our kids, my wife found this maybe 15 years ago, one of these mommy blogger sites where we have like a Good Friday meal at lunchtime, which is very small, obviously, but we have pretzels representing like the crown of thorns. And we have olive representing all the different parts of it. I'm forgetting now everything in it, but I can tell you, my kids never forget this because they're always like, we got to do the Good Friday meal. We got to do the Good Friday meal. So, and we bring out the Bible and there's the scripture readings for it all. And our kids get very excited by it. So
I'll
have to track that down. She's big on that. It's just a neat way for our kids to realize,
have you ever done a Seder meal, Josh?
Once, I think.
Okay. I think my mom did that one time. We had lamb. I distinctly remember that. We tried it out one year. We did lamb. So we got a few rolling in here, I think, are definitely worth shouting out. So,
yeah, I saw somebody said they do the Passion of Christ, watch it every year. That's kind of intense. Yeah. I mean, I end up only doing it, watching it about every 5 years because I just don't want it, you know, to get numb to it. I like Mel Gibson. I thought that was a fantastic movie. My roommate went to go see it in the theater, and the guy next to him had a bowl full of popcorn. He just looked at him like, do you even know what movie you're watching? The guy got Say a few Christ bites out of it, and then you didn't need anything else for the rest of the 2 hours.
Dude, say Christ is Lord. If you're eating popcorn during the Passion, I don't know if you're actually human.
I don't think you knew what was going on with it, so that was a waste of $7.
Yeah, so we have a few exciting firsts. Also, Easter Vigil is a big one. So we have a shout-out Mitch, a newborn daughter, getting baptized on Easter. That's amazing. Ariel, first time hosting Easter for the family. Congratulations, that's cool. I know this guy, Josh Resnichuk. What up, Josh? Director of video here at Catholic Vote. Said he covers up statues in the house for Holy Week. I actually really like this idea because churches do it for the most part. If you go to a church, most likely they cover them up. Our church was all covered up on Sunday.
Except for Rich Rocco's church, apparently.
Yeah, apparently. Except for the trolls on Twitter. They took them down, dude. They want those statues out. We got shout out another Catholic Vote employee, Barbara Moore. Holy Thursday, do a foot washing with the family, then a Passover meal, read the Bible. Very nice.
Look at Mitchell, our favorite commenter. We do empty tomb desserts. The kids wrap a crescent roll around a marshmallow and bake it. The marshmallow melts, representing Christ is risen. I absolutely think that's super neat, but I hate marshmallow in just about every form. So I'm sure my kids will love it though.
You're not a Peeps guy, Josh?
I don't. Peeps are the worst. Although I buy some just to put it in the microwave and watch them get to be the size of like a Tyrannosaurus Rex. You know, they get really huge. But actually, the only time I like marshmallow is Rice Krispie Treats if they would have the peanut butter. Then I like that. But then other than that, I don't like marshmallow usually.
I think Peeps are a psyop that everyone just pretended to like, kind of, but no one actually does. Is there people actually like Peeps out there? I mean,
why would you eat that when you can have a Reese's Pieces egg? I don't understand.
Exactly. Yeah, the Reese's is the play for sure in the egg form.
Best tastes actually ever. Good.
Were you on the Prince of Egypt train? I definitely was. Watched this many times. We love that, too. Prince of Egypt is sick, dude. Soundtrack, unbelievable. So cool. Okay, we got home parish, Hispanic parish. Four men carry a statue of Christ's deceased body following the Good Friday liturgy and lay him in a makeshift tomb.
Wow.
Followed by adoration. That is crazy. I've never heard of that.
That is major awesome, Matthew. That's cool.
Dude, shout out, Matthew. That is crazy.
Starburst jelly beans, the only Easter candy I like. That's Ariel. You know who loved jelly beans a ton? Which president loved jelly beans the most?
Reagan.
That's it.
Oh, let's go. Okay.
He got the jelly belly beans. He got them.
He said, Peeps stopped tasting good when I turned 7. You're a legend.
I used to like, when I was a kid, the Cadbury eggs, but now they're way too sweet.
Oh, I can't do. Oh, yeah, those are someone. That's another psyop. No one likes Cadbury. Actually, no, I'm going to get pushback on that. I know people that do. But another thing, too, the Easter Vigil Mass. So when I was in college, this is kind of cool. Shout out to Ave Maria. We would do the Easter Vigil Mass, and then they would have, like, all the candles light up. And we had someone up in the balcony taking a picture, so you just see, like, all the candles kind of, like, slowly light up. It was really cool. And then afterwards, there was a household, which is, like, kind of our, I guess, Catholic version of fraternities. They would put on a resurrection party right after. So we would get out of the Vigil Mass, roll over to the cafeteria, and they had like Chick-fil-A, a DJ, they had lights going. It was pretty awesome.
Chick-fil-A, because it was still Saturday,
right? I don't know. I don't want to get anyone in trouble here, but Chick-fil-A. Well, it was past midnight, so it was Sunday.
Oh, well then.
Vigil Mass.
Yeah, but the Sunday.
It was a midnight mass.
They're not open on Sundays, Chick-fil-A.
Oh, yeah, we got them catered like Saturday night. We must have been there before. I don't know how they pulled
it
off.
Big brain.
Shout out to – shout out to – was that
– Oh, caramel Cadbury eggs? Gosh. Why do I know about this? Brad. Man. You know, though, when a kids eat the jelly beans, they pretty much all give the black jelly beans to me because they hate black licorice, except for my son Charlie.
Yeah.
But I love the black licorice, dude.
Yeah, I don't like jelly beans. I think I was kind of ruined because did you ever have those Bean Boozles? You know what I'm talking about? Where they'll have some taste really good and then some will taste like a fart. You know what I'm talking about?
No, I have no idea. But what is this? Good morning from Bismarck. I'm wearing my You Mary shirt for look at that. Hey, yeah, would you like that? Mary. I'm gonna be heading to Bismarck next month. Go check out the UMary campus with my daughter. She's probably gonna enroll there. So shout out UMary. Good school. Good school. I got two other of my friends. Their kids are probably gonna be going to UMary too. So I thought I'd
Yeah,
represent with the shirt.
you marry kind of the move. dude, love that you measure the one mass that is so long you can eat a Snickers bar at the Gloria and still be good for Eucharistic fast.
Oh,
The
Matthew. No,
chat is
no.
on fire today.
Terrible. That does remind me, though. I mean,
okay,
there are
so
people who are, if we're going to talk about stuff, I mean, Pentecost, I know it's a few weeks later, but I remember I went to a charismatic church for Pentecost Sunday because apparently I hate myself. And these people have good faith. They're good people. But I mean, I think it was like 3 hours long. And come on. I'm a bad Catholic. I couldn't handle it.
it was a revival. The vigil's long. Actually, if we're getting into real personal stories, so I was an altar server growing up, and at our parish we had like 40 kids serve every Sunday. It was crazy. Shout out to Saint Cyril Methodius in Michigan. But one, because they're so long, and there'd be incense, and it got really hot in the church because we were all in the get-ups, and ventilation was bad. So people had that would hold the candles. We would all be holding the candles. And I remember just like looking over at this other kid kind of altar serving. Me and my friend were there. And the kid kind of gives us a heads up, like, "Hey, I'm not feeling too good." And he's like, "Hey, do you need to go to the bathroom?" So I was like, "No, like, I think I can make it. I think I can make it." I can't remember. We were like an hour deep at this point. And then all of a sudden we just heard bam, like just heard a huge bang on a, and he totally passed out, hit his head on the pew. And we had to like carry him out like a like an angel or something. Like we just like carried him out in the robes all the way out to like go take him. He was okay. He was all good, but that Easter Vigil Mass can get pretty long. And I'll never
On
forget
his
that kid
head, just
passing
to carry
out,
him out. No, I'm kidding.
banging his head. No, not exactly. So Josh, do you have anything for your Twilight Zone this week?
Well, my only Twilight Zone, I guess, would be the liberal furor online that MSNBC decided to hire former RNC chair Ronna Romney McDaniel to be a spokesperson, like a TV talking head. And they just lost their minds. Like, how could you have a party flack now working there? And I'm like, well, what are you talking about? Like, Jen Psaki was working for the White House, and now she's at MSNBC, and you don't have a problem with that. What's the difference? And of course, you have George Stephanopoulos, who's been on ABC News forever. He was Clinton's main flack guy. So this idea that suddenly it's outrageous that someone would work for an official party organization and then be a part of the media, they're all so upset about this. And it's like, oh, it's because it's a Republican that you have a problem with. It's not that you have a problem with a party hack. So it just cracks me up.
Well, my favorite was that morning Joe was mad about it. He's like, she is not welcome on my show. I can't believe they would extend this or whatever.
Oh,
He's like
Morning
the king
Joe.
of all the
Isn't he a
hacks.
former Republican congressman? Oh, gee.
Wait, what? He was?
Are you kidding me? You don't know this?
No. Morning Joe was a congressman?
Joe Scarborough was a congressman from the Redneck Riviera, the Florida Panhandle, dude. Yeah, he was. And the online, conspiracy rumors is that one of his employees on his staff got murdered, and people are blaming it on him. And it's like that there's a whole online conspiracy, and that's how the deep state has the dirt on him or whatever. I'm not substantiating that in
What?
any way, but like the online trolls are crazy about him. Yeah, no, but he was a congressman from Florida, fairly conservative. And then now he's with MSNBC, and for the last 20 years has been a total left winger. He's crazy.
Josh, that's not common knowledge. I don't think most people know him as the guy that Trump broke. Like he sounds like a crazy person on
He
MSNBC
was
every
a
morning.
representative. Someone said from Alabama. No, Brad, he was Florida Panhandle. He was a congressman from Florida Panhandle. Yeah, I remember that.
Wow.
He used to be conservative. I mean, it's a very conservative district, very conservative area. But in
Oh,
this,
yeah, for sure.
yeah, I'm surprised that
Wow.
people. I mean, I'm a political nerd, so I know all this stuff. But it's all right.
I mean, this is true. This
He
is
was
true.
Congressman from Florida's first district from 1995 to 2001. He left office September 5th, 2001, just a week before 9/11. Yeah.
So let's go through it then. Do any other political commentators have interesting pasts that we should know about? Like, do you know what was Tucker's deal? because Tucker obviously has his own network now.
He never, not that I, he never actually campaigned for, you know, he never was a spokesman for any politician that I can think of, but you know, it's not uncommon for these people to be on one side, you know, be like Jen Psaki was the press secretary for, you know, the White House.
Oh, for sure.
And now she's on MSNBC. So these are very common.
Didn't Whoopi Goldberg, did she represent anyone?
No, dude. She was Hollywood all the way. She was an actress.
No, I'm just kidding.
Movies. Yeah.
That was a total joke. I know that she was in Sister Act 1 and 2. That's where she got all her expertise about politics. So she hopped over to The View.
Obviously, and yeah.
Because Alyssa Farah Griffin was on Trump's team, right?
She was actually for Vice President Mike Pence, yeah.
Yeah, that was it. Okay. Because I know they kind of pull people in. And then Rosie O'Donnell famously on The View, right? Trump not a fan?
No, she's not a fan. But
well, Trump wasn't a fan of her.
Famously. Right, no, exactly.
Yeah, I had – my only other potential Twilight Zone was – the Trump legal woe saga. So did you hear about Trump's potential way out of not being able to pay back the debt?
Well, the thing is, he's apparently Truth Social finally went through the merger, mm-hmm. or whatever. And now he's standing to win like this windfall, like $4 to $5 billion or something like that.
It's like $4.5 to $5 billion. So basically he's at the point now where Letitia James, the Attorney General of New York, is trying to seize his assets. So I think either today or tomorrow she potentially legally could, because he has to pay back this $450 million in debt. And so she's trying to go after his golf course in upstate New York and a few other things. And he's really trying to avoid that happening. So he's trying to do a few things in the legal system. But his other strategy is to do it got really popular around like 2020, 2021, but a SPAC. So basically it's another company merging with True Social to then take it public, because it has the ability to do so. If he takes it public and it has a successful opening, he could come into about $4 or $5 billion. So he would have way more money than he needs to pay this back. But man, we're getting real creative with ways to have to pay back this amount of money.
Well, Trump might just not pay it back and have her try to seize his property, because I think it would be great TV and actually probably give
him my gosh.
The polls. Because
I was totally thinking about that.
Yeah, I would not be surprised by that at all.
Because I feel like the biggest – so I remember him and DeSantis were pretty much neck and neck in the beginning, and the biggest tide shift was when they raided Mar-a-Lago. Do you remember that?
Yeah, it definitely made a difference in his campaign. It gave him a boost. Any chance Huge. That DeSantis had to make inroads were pretty much over by that point.
Yeah, because it gave him kind of the persecuted narrative. It was right. Like, hey, look, they literally are on my property, shoving around guns, all that. Yep. And so I just think this – I don't know if – Josh, you got to tell me. Like, I need real answers on this. Is there hope to truly just get him in jail is the only way to stop him from winning at this point? So they're just going all in on that strategy, even though it makes him look like a martyr and makes him look persecuted?
So I don't think the timeline's on their side. I mean, like – they could seize these assets with the New York case, and then the D.C. Circuit Court case is going up to the Supreme Court now, and the Supreme Court's going to, you know, hear the case and then argue it and probably remand the case back to the D.C. Circuit with instructions. Unfortunately, all this time frame for the Democrats, unfortunately, is that they're not going to be able to get Trump from a legal standpoint until, you know, he's on the other side of this election. Just the timing isn't working out for them. And it does look like lawfare. It does look like they're trying to mobilize, you know, within Georgia, with what's going on in D.C., and then in New York. The New York case is the simplest one for people to understand. It's like, you know.
There's no crime.
It's like, what? There's no crime. There's no one claiming that they got defrauded. There's no victims. And you're just thinking that he assessed his property too high in order to get a loan, which he used to build a hotel building, and then he repaid his entire loan in full. So what's the crime exactly?
There is none. Did you see what happened in Georgia?
Well, there's so much going on with the Georgia case. Yeah, it's crazy.
So quick synopsis, if I can, because it was like the Maru show. Fannie Willis is the district attorney of Fulton County, Georgia. She had a special agent prosecute. His name's Nathaniel Wade. prosecute Trump, and she had a romantic relationship with him before all this happened. And so they brought her on the stage. So like obvious ethics concerns there, right? And so they brought her up. She didn't even, her lawyer was begging her not to testify. She testifies anyway, basically admits to campaign finance fraud in like three different ways, admits to this inappropriate relationship with this guy. And so after all this goes down, the judge made the decision to only remove this guy Wade from the case.
Which they left had Fannie to do Willis it, on. And admit it.
They 100% had to do it, but they could have also taken Fannie Willis off the case.
I know. I kind of think it helps Trump that she's remains on it because she's so compromised.
Exactly. Like, it's really, I mean, all the clips are out there. It's shocking that this person is anywhere near power. I think she had an interview clip when she was running for the position. She said, Fulton County deserves someone that is not going to sleep with subordinates or steal money from the taxpayers. And she literally just admitted to doing both during the testimony. You're like, oh my gosh, like these are the people going after Trump.
But so, and like, it was crazy. This guy, Noah Rothman, he's kind of conservative-ish, but he's a never Trumper type. And when the story broke about Truth Social merging and getting approved in time, so that he'll get this payout of like $5 billion or whatever it is. And Noah Rothman's just like shaking his head at Trump, someone who he's had problems with because he's a never Trumper. He's like, man, he's the luckiest guy alive. It's like, it is true. He's like Teflon Don. Like, they keep trying to get him. And it's like, you know, and the never Trumpers just say he's the dumbest guy in the world. But then is he really just pure luck and really dumb, or is he, maybe he knows what he's doing? So it's interesting.
Who knows? But I think that puts us at a little bit of a wrap here. Love seeing so many people in the live stream. It's so fun interacting with you guys. Definitely going to be bringing more questions forward. So on a housekeeping note, we are not going to be recording on Good Friday for sure, for obvious reasons. We hope you all are praying and taking that time to practice your faith and celebrate your faith. So what's going on is we're going to record again on Wednesday and then enjoy Easter. We'll see about Monday. I haven't talked to people about what's going on Monday yet, but we'll let you guys know either way on Monday, Wednesday. But for sure, no show on Friday. Just ask that you pray for us. We'll be praying for you. Have a wonderful Holy Week, guys, and we'll see you on the next show on Wednesday. Pray St. Thomas More, St. Fidelis, Our Lady of Guadalupe. Pray for us, and we'll see you guys then. Take care.